Aboriginal women in Australia experience all the same challenges that Aboriginal men experience, except that Aboriginal women have challenges that are unique to their position as women. One of the main issues for Aboriginal women in communities is this notion of dual discrimination, which is to say you are discriminated by virtue of being Aboriginal in addition to being discriminated by virtue of your gender. What this means is that some of the serious challenges facing Aboriginal people in Australia are more acutely felt by Aboriginal women. So, for example, over-incarceration and imprisonment in Australia, it has rapidly increased in terms of Aboriginal women since roughly 1991, when Australia first had its Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. Similarly, issues such as employment, access to health, and, of course, the perennial challenge of violence against women are more acutely felt among Aboriginal women in Australia.
And where does that gender discrimination come from? Does it come from within the community or from outside, or both?
That's a good question. It's actually both. There is a discrimination that is experienced by women because of the nature of, I suppose, the political advocacy of Aboriginal affairs, which is to say Aboriginal people organise themselves collectively and as a group, and of course culturally. But when it comes to the interface with the state, women's issues tend to be invisibilised because one doesn't want to give the impression to the state that there are problems within our own group. As a consequence of that, a lot of the issues prosecuted by the Aboriginal political rights movement and legal rights movement are those issues that affect mostly men.
Is political representation the answer to fighting this type of discrimination?
We have seen an increase in political representation in terms of the mainstream Australian parliaments. But because of the power of party politics, Aboriginal women's issues haven't become any more prominent because of that female representation.
The international community has just agreed the agenda for the post-2015 period. Is there anything in there which is going to improve the situation for the Aboriginal people in Australia?
Look, I'm probably a little bit cynical, like a lot of my colleagues on the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, in that an over-reliance on these kinds of negotiated international documents to date has not seen a dramatic improvement in the situation of Indigenous peoples. And the permanent forum that I sit on has explored this issue of rights ritualism, which is that member states enter into a kind of ritual performance at an international level. But what that actually does is veil a reluctance of states to actually implement those principles and agreements that they've signed up to. We've started exploring that as a forum. In addition, considering better ways or more innovative ways in which you can engage states. For now, I can't say whether or not the post-2015 agenda is something that will improve the lives of Indigenous peoples, but I would have to say, as an international lawyer and an expert in Indigenous issues, I would be sceptical at this point.
Does coming to the UN to attend conferences like this one, does it make any difference?
I actually think in the past three decades of Indigenous advocacy at the United Nations, it has made a huge difference to the lives of Indigenous peoples. I know that probably sounds kind of counterfactual to what I just said. However, when you look at the advocacy by Indigenous peoples in the early days, the 70s and 80s, we've been incredibly successful in carving out a space within the UN system for Indigenous peoples' rights. In Geneva, for example, the working group there achieved this, the permanent forum that sits here in New York. It achieved the International Day. It achieved two international decades, a special rapporteur. And those kinds of incremental ways of chipping away at the state have been really, really important. So, yeah, I do think in some ways they make a difference. Where they haven't probably made such a significant difference, and I return to this notion of ritualism, is in relation to international human rights law. And that's because we're finding, as the treaty body reform is finding in Geneva, the carrot and stick approach to states in terms of that kind of naming and shaming to force compliance with international obligations hasn't worked, doesn't work. It does work on occasions, but not sufficiently enough to see that kind of improvement, substantive concrete improvement that you're talking about within domestic jurisdictions.